Chapter 4. In the kitchen at Abuelita's, my father worked the stove. Sauces simmered, meats sautéed. One by one, he constructed burritos, enchiladas, gorditas, and tacos. Hola, mija, he said as I came in. Hola, papi. The knife my brother Antonio had been using to mince green onions stopped its rapid chopping. He scowled the second he saw me. You're late. I was so not in the mood for him playing boss. I was tired, starving, sore, and anxious about seeing Jack. I scowled back. I have a new case at my real job. Good for you, Antonio tossed the green onions into the vat of guacamole, squeezed a lime into it, and stirred. Pero, you need to be here when you're scheduled. Somos tu familia. Yes, but the restaurant is yours, I said, not mine. I'm here now. I tried to end my sentence the way my mother did, with an implied punto. But my punto fell short because he kept pushing. It's all of ours. I really had to start paying more attention to Mommy and how she made things so final with her tone. I flicked my chin toward the swinging door that led to the dining room. It's all good, Toño. Sylvia's still here. My brother grumbled, but he knew I was right. He went back into the dining room, the obligatory harassment over. Appealing to my father, I smiled sweetly, rubbing my rumbling stomach with one hand. Papi, por favor, ¿puedo tener una enchilada? His leathery face relaxed into a thousand lines, his salt and pepper hair aging him beyond his 53 years. Sí, pero, he wagged a wooden spoon at the kitchen at large. Stay behind the cooking line. I waited while my father crafted two cheese enchiladas, filling them with minced onions, a mix of shredded cheese, and sliced black olives. He topped them with a ladle full of red chili sauce and slid the plate across the stainless steel warming shelf. I covered the plate with a paper towel, popped it into the microwave for a few seconds, then plopped a dollop of sour cream and a healthy spoonful of chunky guacamole onto the enchiladas. I returned the plate to the warming shelf. Arroz y frijoles, por favor. My father took the plate, heaped on rice and beans, and handed it to me just as Antonio came back into the kitchen, his arms weighted down with dirty plates. I took a bite, muttering a blissful, gracias. Por nada, papi said. Antonio sighed in exasperation, shaking his head. Hurry, would you? Chelly can't make it tonight. Oh, man. That meant I'd be filling salt and pepper shakers, refilling hot sauce bottles, and cleaning the pint-sized flower vases to get them ready for tomorrow. Why? She has cheerleading practice. I whipped my head around. Since when is she a cheerleader? Since the beginning of the school year? Antonio waved a hand in front of my face. What's going on in there? I forked a piece of enchilada into my mouth. Wow, I was too out of touch with La Familia Cruz. Then a thought struck me. I could get private cheerleading help from my 15-year-old cousin if Victoria couldn't get me up to speed muy rápido. Pero no, Telly couldn't keep a secret.
And when he came to the place where the wild things are, they roared their terrible roars and gnashed their terrible teeth, and rolled their terrible eyes, and showed their terrible claws. Till Max said, "Be still!" and tamed them with a magic trick of staring into all their yellow eyes without blinking once. And they were frightened and called him the most wild thing of all, and made him king of all wild things.
And now, cried Max, let the wild rumpus start.
But the kitty boy had no intention of returning Darwin's bones before he bounced on his big boy bed. First he pounced and wiggled. Then he bounced and giggled. All the way up to the ceiling he chanted, oh, I'm Skippy John Jones and I bounce on my bed because I love to eat pickles that tickle my head. Then he flung himself over to the mirror for a head check.
Holy hairballs, exclaimed Skippy John Jones, pulling out his tape measure. That's one huge cabeza.
Un día, mamá Osa cocinó una gran olla de sopa deliciosa y caliente para el desayuno. Estaba muy caliente para comerla, así que los osos decidieron ir por un paseo mientras la sopa se enfriaba.
I thought about those nights in Iguala, when we'd sold goodies with our mother at La Quinta Castrejón, and watched all those young girls with their beautiful quinceañera dresses. I recognized that look of longing in her eyes. And I knew that if I could have seen myself in a mirror at that moment, I would have seen the same look in my own eyes. You know what, Nena? I'm going to throw you a quinceañera. What are you talking about? You're crazy, I said. I already turned 15 2 months ago. And besides, where are you going to get the money? I don't know, but I'll get it. I'll ask my friends to be the godparents, but I'll do it. I thought my sister was nuts. Quinceañeras were expensive, and there was no way Mago, with her part-time job, could pull it off. She climbed up the bumper and onto the hood. The man behind the steering wheel honked his horn and took his cigar out of his mouth to yell at her. Chabela, her grandfather shouted when he saw her. Chabela, get down from there! Isabel ignored them both and turned this way and that, calling out for her father. There! She saw her papi just as he reared back and threw a bottle that smashed into the line of police along the seawall. It was the last straw for the police. At a command from their leader, they pushed forward into the crowd, arresting rioters and hitting them with wooden batons.
Cobra was an old servant of Nahid's family who was known throughout the neighborhood for the accuracy of her readings. She reminded me of some of the women of my village, who could look at the sky or a handful of peas and tell you whether the moment was auspicious for your desires. Her skin was the color of dates, and the fine wrinkles in her forehead and cheeks made her look wise. Nahid summoned Cobra to her rooms a few moments after we arrived, and she came bearing two vessels of coffee and told us to drink it without disturbing the grounds. We consumed it in one or two gulps so that she could read our future in the remaining froth. First, she peered into Nahid's cup and smiled, showing us her nearly toothless gums. She began describing Nahid's marriage to a handsome young man with lots of money and a body as strong as the hero Rostam's, an event that was to be followed by the birth of more children than she could count. You'll be spending lots of time with your feet in the air, she said. The prediction was exactly what her mistress wished to hear.